The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What's on your mind about firearms today? And it's another great day in Fairbanks. Did you see the beautiful pink-orange sunrise this morning? Well, we're going to pay for that with, 10 inches of snow that's forecast. I saw the article on the Newsminer, and the temperature is -9 degrees here downtown. And here in the room with us at the broadcasting station, Melissa is expertly running the board again today. Thank you, Melissa. What would we do without you? And Melissa is also keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss a program, it'll be accessible in the archives within a day. And I appreciate that a lot. Thank you, Melissa. What should we celebrate today, November 5th? Well, clearly, we should celebrate Glenn Miller being in the studio with us today to share his knowledge on reloading. But first, an important holiday, the November 5th celebrations in Britain, where they build bonfires and set off firecrackers to commemorate and celebrate way back on November 5th, 1605, King James I survived a plot to kill him, along with England's entire Protestant government, by blowing up the House of Lords in the Parliament building during opening ceremonies. And the popular name for that event is the Guy Fawkes Night or Guy Fawkes Day. And Guy Fawkes was one of 13 English conspirators who were tortured and gruesomely killed after being caught carrying out this plot. And it was Guy Fawkes who was found holding the means to light the gunpowder. He was tortured until he gave up his co-conspirators. The event was originally referred to as the Gunpowder Plot. And I decided, because the word gunpowder was involved, that Guy Fawkes Night was worth a mention today, November 5th. And it's a fascinating part of the historic religious conflict between the Catholics and the Protestants in England at the time. So look it up, read about it, watch YouTube while you munch on bonfire toffee, which is the popular candy to eat while watching the bonfires. Now, in modern times, the ARUP group, it's A-R-U-P, it's a British company, they built a reconstruction of the 1605 Parliament building and set all around it 36 barrels of gunpowder. That's the amount found during the real attempt. And they filled the reconstructed building with mannequins. And they used blast analysis techniques to figure out what would have happened if the plot succeeded. And just think about it. If Guy Fawkes had lit the gunpowder, almost every influential person in England at the time might have been killed. And here's a quote from the ARUP website. Quote, any of the physical effects of the explosion, such as a direct blast pressure, heat, impact of high-speed timber fragments, and the impact of falling back to earth, could also have killed many, if not all, of those present. But the extreme upward thrust would have been the primary cause of death. The power of the explosion would have been heard at least 5 miles away and seen from many more. The blast would have been directed mostly upwards, raining debris in a 200-meter radius. That's about 656 feet. So here's a popular rhyme chanted in England this day on November 5th. Remember, remember, the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up king and parliament. 60 barrels of powder below, poor old England to overthrow. And one last thought. To this day, before the annual state opening of Parliament every year, Even though there is no serious terroristic threat, the yeomen of the guard search the Houses of Parliament to keep the tradition going. Now, for the best part of this program, Glenn Miller planned an hour packed with reloading information. Remember, call in with your reloading questions, 458-8255, because after today, it will be a couple of months before Glenn is back with us, I hope with tales of his adventures on the match circuit. Glenn, thank you for being with us today, and the program is all yours.
Thank you, Laura, and it is great to be back here and an honor to be talking about reloading on Gunpowder Day. it's great. I walked over to the studio this morning, and it was 9 below, and it felt good. So you know winter is here when 9 below feels good, right?
Yes. So, it's warm.
I think yesterday it was 26 below at the airport, and I think out North Pole it was 30 below something.
Yes.
It's supposed to go all the way up to, I think, 1 degree today or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting the shorts out when I get home. So, this is the time of the year that I like to do a lot of my reloading work so I can spend summers shooting. And I really try to avoid doing bulk loading projects in the summer when I want to be shooting, especially when it comes to brass preparation. So this is really the time of the year to get that stuff done. Cleaning and sorting cases, sizing and trimming rifle brass, removing primer pocket crimps from batches of brass, etc. These are the real time-consuming efforts associated with the reloading process. And I just saw that, and I'm not advertising for Dillon, but I just saw that Dillon Precision came out with a new press. It's called the CP2000.
Oh.
And that press is specifically designed for brass preparation. So those of you that do a lot of volume loading and need to prep a lot of rifle brass, and that pretty much that's rifle brass takes way more time than pistol caliber brass. They make a press just to do this and to speed up the process. And I think they're claiming that it'll process 2,000 pieces of brass an hour, which is pretty amazing. Once you have your brass prepped, it's amazing how fast the reloading process itself goes. It's actually very simple. It's really all the time goes into the brass preparation. But this is also the time of the year that it's a good idea to look over your reloading press and see if it needs any maintenance. Over time, especially with progressive presses, they can get really dirty, slow down your reloading process, and having to stop and work on various stages of your press not only slows you down, but it can present safety issues when you forget where you're at in the reloading process and you have to stop and fix something or maintain something on your press. So this is a good time to look at your press and look it over before you start going through volumes amount of ammunition. Look for your press and look at your press and see if it feels smooth. Move the handle up and down, see if it moves smoothly. If it feels at all sticky, it probably needs some love. Cleaning all the pivot points, wiping off the cylinders, applying fresh lubricant makes a huge difference in how your press operates and how much effort you have to put into that. And when you sit there and you have to pull the handle thousands or sometimes tens of thousands of times in the winter, you know, getting your ammunition stock up, making that easier on yourself is a lot nicer. Check the mounting bolts to hold your press down. Are they tight? Check the priming system. You'll be surprised where those spent primers go and where they get caught when they get ejected from your cartridges.
Yeah.
They get into all kinds of crevices and create problems. Progressive presses, they require a lot more maintenance than single-stage presses. And don't neglect your reloading dies, especially heavily used calibers. Take them apart, clean them, especially if you're loading cast bullets. The seating dies can accumulate a lot of bullet lube in them, and so cleaning those up can really help things out.
Okay.
And make your dies last longer.
Yeah, okay.
And I think we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Now that we're once again in the great frozen north, it's time to stay warm and be prepared for the elements. Being prepared was ingrained in me at a very early age, and Auto Trim Design can help you be prepared too. With auto starts to warm your car, heated seats to warm your buns, moose lights to show you the way, mud flaps and floor mats to protect your rig, running boards to make getting in and out of your truck less tedious, and much, much more. Get prepared today at Auto Trim Design. And as Bob says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
Weather brought to you by PNC Heating, Boiler Repair and Maintenance, plus Toil Stove Service and Repair at your location. PNC Heating Service, call 460-1746.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Glenn Miller today, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK. Tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. And I'm turning the program back over to Glenn Miller on reloading.
Thank you, Laura. And so the other day I was looking at a friend's loading bench, and I noticed that he had a canister of IMR 4007 SSC. That's their super shortcut powder. And in October of 2019, so about a year ago, they issued a safety product recall, this powder. And I'm not sure if all of it got recalled and if there's any still out there. But there was a massive recall on that. So just as a precaution, if anyone has any of that powder, it's IMR 4007 SSC. If you do still have any of that on your bench, you probably ought to check with IMR, look at their website, and look at the lot number, check with them and see if it's safe to use. I think they've actually stopped using that powder. They discontinued it. But anyway, just something to look at. So as I get ready to fly south and enjoy the sunshine again and see the sunshine again, I'm preparing to travel and shoot in a variety of pistol matches with USPSA and Steel Challenge. And as mentioned earlier, I probably won't be on the program for a couple of months. I'll probably be back here for a bit in January. I mean, who wouldn't want to miss January in Fairbanks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can always call in, Glenn. From wherever you are, you can always call in.
But, you know, I shoot a lot of matches, I shoot a lot of ammunition in matches, and when I travel, it's impractical to take that ammunition with me. So when I get to my destination outside, I load all of the ammunition.
Oh, we have a phone call. Caller, this is Laura.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I've got a Dillon BL-550, I believe it's a model, progressive loader. And I had my kids ship it up here to me, but they didn't send me the dies. I was wondering if the RCBS or Lyman mode dies would work in that progressive prep.
Yes, caller. Those dies will work. The Dillon tool heads accept the standard dies, which are 7/8 14 dies. So Lyman, RCBS, and any of the other popular dies will work in your progressive press. One thing that the some of the Dillon dies have that have a little bit of an advantage is some of them are flared at the base that help the casings go into the body of the die a little bit easier. Some of the other manufacturers are doing that also. But if you're experiencing problems with the mouth of the cases hitting the surface of the dies, you might want to look at them and see if they're tapered. And if so, they'll work a lot better. But those dies will work in your 550.
Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
And we have another caller.
Oh, we have another caller. This is Laura.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, and those Dillon 550 dies, there's a company called Unique Tech, and they make a tool head so you can actually turn that 550 and the 650s into like a single-stage press. So I got one, and that way if you run across a rifle you pick up, you can just use standard dies in it, you know. It's just a center hole in the middle, so, you know, it's not progressive that way, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you for that information. That is great. Thank you. All right.
Okay. So when I was talking about when I travel to shoot, I go through a lot of ammunition. So I do all my loading outside, and so I have the good fortune to have somebody out there. My dad, he's got all of the reloading equipment outside that I get to use and load up all my ammunition before I start shooting. And I do have a stash of components back there that I get to use. The only thing I need is a good recipe. So when I show up, I need that recipe, what bullets, what powder, what primers, what the overall length is, that combination in order to start loading. So this year I was prepared. I went and I got my load all dialed in. I used the chronograph. I knew exactly what load I was using and a particular gun. And then, of course, all this stuff happened this summer and components became rare. And I had to switch to a different kind of a primer, excuse me. And so I developed my load with CCI primers, had to switch to Winchester primers because that's what I have in the outside to load with. And when I changed to the Winchester primers, the accuracy really was terrible.
Oh.
And I'm saying this just because it's good to know that when you change just one component, and you wouldn't think primers would make that big of a difference, but it does, or it can. And in this case, the accuracy really was terrible in this particular gun with this powder and this bullet combination. So I really, being stuck with a certain powder, I use tight group a lot, using the Winchester primers and these particular bullets, I really didn't have much choice. I had to start playing with the overall length and try to get my accuracy back. And I was able to do so. And just by varying the overall length of the cartridge. And I'm bringing this up because I want everyone to understand that the overall length of cartridges, especially in a rifle, can really make a huge difference in the accuracy of that particular firearm. Because the chambers are different, the rifling where it begins is different, and it's if you're limited on components, which we are right now, that is one thing that you can look at that you can do is start, changing the overall length to establish accuracy. But you just have to remember there are limits to both the minimum and the maximum overall length in regards to reliability, function. The pressure is generated, so you have to do so cautiously and gradually. And there are tools and measuring instruments that are made specifically for this function to determine what's best in your firearm. So that's good to remember. So I'm going to go on and I'm going to talk about finishing up our talk on bullet pullers that we started last time.
Yeah.
And last show, we were talking about different types of bullet pullers, and I covered the collet type. And I was finishing up on the inertia type of bullet puller, which is the most common type found on loading benches today because they're inexpensive, they're easy to use, they're compact. I have several of them on my bench, various benches, just when I need to pull a bullet or if I'm shooting and I have a load that the primer's upside down or something's wrong, I just pull it out there while I'm shooting. But basically, it's a plastic hammer that you insert the cartridge in the top half and you strike the hammer on a hard surface. And by doing so, the weight of the bullet causes it to unseat itself from the case. And then the bullet and the powder fall to the bottom of the hammer chamber. And so you can dump it out and reuse both the bullet and the powder. And they're popular, they're quick to set up, but they do have their faults. And sometimes the bullet becomes damaged when it stops at the bottom of the hammer chamber, especially pointed bullets with fragile tips. When it hits the bottom of the hammer, it could damage it a little bit. You also need a really hard surface to strike the hammer on, and preferably cement. I've tried to use the top of my loading bench and the floor around my loading bench, and it just usually results in dents in the wood. It's not hard enough, so you really need a good solid surface. And yeah, sometimes you find yourself wandering around looking for a hard surface to beat on, with your hammer. And if somebody that's looking at you thinks you may have mental stability issues,
Time to leave the room.
Yeah. But they work well, and they're easy to use. But there's a new type out there I'd like to talk about a little bit. It's made by Frankfurt Arsenal. It's called the Pile Driver. And this, the pile driver, it mounts on the wall, and it looks like a can crusher, with a handle that moves up and down 180 degrees. And moving the handle up, it cocks the mechanism, and you put this carrier that has the cartridge in it, you put that in there, and then as you move the handle up, it compresses springs. Moving the handle downward releases the carrier, and the springs drive it downward, stopping the carrier abruptly, causing the projectile to unseat from the case. So it still works on the inertia principle. It's just self-contained. You don't have to whack it on anything. You know, it's mounted to the wall. And the components, they get captured in the bottom in this foam-lined cup, so the powder can be saved and the bullet reused. The issues that I've seen with it is that, you know, if you have pointed bullets, like the Hornady FTX bullets, they tend to make holes in the foam and damage it. So an alternate is you can put a piece of rubber hose on the bottom of this and run it down to a container. Okay. And then the bullets and the powder fall into that container, and, of course, you can reuse those. And if you have tightly crimped rounds, you may need additional strokes to release the bullet. Sometimes it doesn't happen on the first attempt. If you have really tightly crimped pistol rounds, sometimes it takes three or four times in order to release it. And one of the disadvantages of this thing is it's really loud. When you're using it on your bench, it sounds almost like a .22 short going off. It's pretty loud. So you might want to wear hearing protection. And some people have complained about the lever pins shearing off with minimal use. So I think they still have a few bugs to work out, but these things aren't real expensive. They're around $50 or $60, and it may be a good option for your loading bench for pulling bullets. And I know last time we wanted to talk about some electronic powder dispensers, and I want to finish that conversation up also. So electronic powder dispensers, they're typically for making precision rifle rounds, but you can use them for just about anything. And the question is it a good alternative to using a manual powder dispenser and then using a powder trickler to achieve your exact desired powder charge? Because they can be expensive. They start at around $250, and they go up, and they can be, you know, $500 or more. And I went for a long time without one until I started doing a lot of precision rifle shooting and decided to try one. And I really like it. It works well. And it can save you time and still dispense accurate powder charges. But if you only load a few hundred rounds a year, it may not be worth the additional expense. The volume loading is certainly where you start to get your investment back because of the time savings. And the setup on these can be a little time consuming because if you don't use it often, they're a little time consuming, the setup. You have to get the instruction manual out, figure out how to set the charge, and unless you use it a lot. If you use it a lot, of course, you don't have to do that. But I only use it once every couple of months, and, you know, therefore...
Start over again.
I have to, you know, relearn how to set this thing up. And in my experience, the biggest issue that I've encountered is overcharging. So it'll dispense a little bit more powder than it should have, and it'll display an error so you don't charge it into the case. But you have to dump it out and, you know, restart the process and reweigh it again. And most of these things do require electricity, where your electronic scales will typically run on electricity or battery. These typically don't run on battery. So you do need power. So if you're doing it like at a cabin or something that doesn't have electricity, they're problematic there. But some of the tips that I've learned using an electronic powder scale like this is the powder dispenser is let them warm up real good. I have found that if you let these warm up for 10 to 15 minutes before you calibrate them, they're a lot more accurate as you work through them. If you use it cold, you can see it start to change initially, and you have to recalibrate it, at least the one that I'm using. And if you use the slowest powder trickle setting for the final powder charge, it normally will dispense accurate charges without going over. And a little trick that I found is if you take a plastic straw, if you can find plastic straws anymore, take a little piece of plastic straw, and sometimes you'll have to cut it lengthwise and fold it over itself and put it in the outlet tube. That sometimes it'll eliminate the clumping that some powders are can be more resistant to consistent metering. And I think we're going to go to a commercial.
Follow the stories you hear on KFAR Radio online at KFARradio.com.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. Former Vice President Joe Biden is nearing the number of electoral votes needed to win the presidential election. The Fox News Decision Desk projects Biden needs just one more state in the win column to hit or pass 270 electoral votes.
Biden's campaign is sending out emails asking for donations to the Biden Fight Fund to bankroll Democratic lawyers for fights ahead that they say they know could go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Fox's Peter Doocy, President Trump's legal teams are filing lawsuits in several battleground states. Trump 2020 campaign manager Bill Stepien expressing confidence the president will eventually win.
Donald Trump is alive and well.
A number of protests reported at facilities counting votes in several states as anti-Trump demonstrators demand a complete ballot count and supporters of the president questioning the counting process. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Max Transit announced on Wednesday that the gray, yellow, and orange bus lines will be moving to on-demand service temporarily. The borough announced that because of low staff due to COVID-19, the lines will be making the temporary change. On-demand service requires that residents call the Max Transit main number at 907-459-1011 and schedule a pickup for one of the routes being placed on demand. The change is only temporary, and normal route services are planned to resume after a few weeks. And finally, the owners of a Seattle-managed crab boat have reached a settlement of more than $9 million with two survivors and the families of four crew members who died last year when the Scandies Rose went down in the Gulf of Alaska. Attorney Michael Barkos said a document disclosing the settlement is expected to be filed Monday in Tacoma. Jerry Markham, an attorney for three families of the deceased crew members, said the state superior court is expected to review the agreement and determine how the money will be divided up. The Scandies Rose went down December 31st after it left the port of Kodiak to the Bering Sea to pursue cod and crab. The National Weather Service had forecast freezing spray, which can cause ice to form on a vessel, resulting in added weight that can severely undermine vessel stability.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Getting out to play in Alaska is a year-round activity. So before you leave home, make sure your trailer is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to wiring and lights. Have it serviced at Arctic RV. Motorhomes, toy haulers, campers, body work to appliances. See their huge selection of RV parts as well. Alaska plays rough. Make sure you and your RV are ready for it with Arctic RV. Book your appointment now. Rough it in style. Arctic RV, 30th and Pegger.
Now that we're once again in the great frozen north, it's time to stay warm and be prepared for the elements. Being prepared was ingrained in me at a very early age, and Auto Trim Design can help you be prepared too. With auto starts to warm your car, heated seats to warm your buns, moose lights to show you the way, mud flaps and floor mats to protect your rig, running boards to make getting in and out of your truck less tedious, and much, much more. Get prepared today at Auto Trim Design. And as Bob says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK. Glenn Miller is in the studio with me today, and he's talking about reloading. Glenn?
Yes, and just to finish up on the conversation on the electronic powder dispensers, I was talking about a little modification that I found that helped me, and using a little piece of plastic straw in the outlet tube, and it seems to help with some of the extruded powders that can be more prone to inconsistent metering. And of course, the other tip is to don't forget to use anti-static, tips on your hopper. Either use like a dryer sheet. I use that quite a bit because when the powder gets staticky, it clings together and it doesn't meter as well. But as we're getting close to the, you know, typically we get close to Thanksgiving, we have sales and, you know, the shopping seasons. That's when I bought my scale, my dispenser. Yeah. And so if you're interested in buying one, you know, probably in the next couple weeks may be a time to be looking, and you can probably pick one up, you know, a lot cheaper. So the next topic that I have is something I think reloaders are going to really be either you're going to love it or you're going to hate it, one of the two. And this is a and the reason I'm bringing this up, we haven't seen too many of this yet. But as reloaders, you know, we're all brass scroungers. I've talked about that before. And you're out there, you're picking up brass and a variety of different things that you'll find out there. And, you know, I think we all walk around with our head. Yeah. People must think we're depressed. We walk around staring at the ground all the time. Well, we're looking for brass, you know, and we're picking up brass. So there's a new type of casing that's out there. It's only a 9mm right now, but it's called NAS3, and these are nickel alloy shell casings. I encountered some of these this summer, and I didn't know what they were. I haven't seen these before. But they're a shell casing that's made by Shelltech, and right now they only, like I say, they only come in 9mm, but they're scheduled to expand into other popular calibers like 308, 223. And they sell the loaded ammunition, or just the cases for reloading. Now these casings are a two-piece case, and the base is aluminum with a nickel shell, and the case is a nickel steel alloy, and the two pieces are swaged together. So when you see this, initially it looks like you found a nickel-plated case, a brass with nickel plating, but there's a visible seam closer to the bottom where the head and the case is joined and they're swaged together.
Okay.
So they have a very unique look. And the manufacturer claims that these are stronger than brass, because they are a steel nickel alloy, and they claim they're using some type of aircraft aluminum for the base. They also claim that it won't bulge at the bottom in unsupported chambers.
Oh.
So some of your pistols have fully supported chambers, others not. Like a lot of the Glocks don't. So if you're firing higher pressure rounds, they have a tendency to put a bulge at the bottom of the case. And you wouldn't think this is a big deal because you're resizing the cases, right? But when you insert the case into the reloading die, the sizing die, it doesn't go all the way to the bottom. There's a little bit left at the base, and if it's bulged, it may have problem feeding in some guns, depending on how tight the chamber is. So it's nice that they have, you know, it's a stronger base that may handle pressure better and not bulge. And these are all manufacturer claims. I haven't tried these yet. So, and they also claim that they eject cooler than brass because of the composition of the metal. So up here, you know, you go shooting and your brass lands on the snow and the ice, and you know what happens. You know, it immediately freezes to it, right? And you're just trying to dig it out and kick it and pick up your brass. Or if you've ever had one go down your shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty hot, you know, or down the back of your neck or something. So how much cooler? I don't know, but they do claim that, you know, when they eject, they are cooler. They're fully reloadable, and obviously they sell cases. And they claim that they last much longer than brass, and they also claim that they won't crack at the mouth of the case like brass will after a while.
Yeah.
So how many times? I don't know, but you know, if it lasts longer. Normally, I lose brass before they crack most of the time, especially if you're firing in a semi-automatic pistol. They're self-lubricating. They're less abrasive than brass, and they will not corrode because of the materials that they're made from. Now, this is the part that reloaders are really going to love. They're magnetic.
Oh,
so. You know,
easy.
I mean, how many times have you talked to a reloader? Boy, I wish I would invent a magnet that picks up brass, right? I mean, you'd be popular with reloaders.
Yeah, I have this mental image of people walking around behind me with a giant magnet on a stick, you know, picking everything up.
So, yeah, so these are magnetic, so you can pick them up with a magnet. So, I mean, that's, you know, but as long as you don't have other steel cases in there that you don't want, because that, yeah, that will happen also. And they clean up nicely with a vibratory tumbler, both inside and out, because of the nickel alloy. So they seem pretty interesting. The downside to it is you do need a special sizing die and case mouth flaring die to reload these things. And you can buy those for about $80. You can use the standard seating and crimp dies, though. And the reason that you have to use these special dies for sizing and case mouth flaring is they're concerned that when the case is inserted into the die and you go to pull the case out, that you could actually separate the two pieces because they're swaged together. And even if you don't separate it, you could damage the swage and it could become loose. So these special dies have like springs loaded into them so that when you insert the case into the die and you're attempting to pull it out, the spring actually assists in pushing it out so you don't damage that swage. And these dies, the special dies, can be used for brass casings also. So if you put them in your, let's say, your progressive press, you can use these dies to size and flare the case mouth on brass casings also. So that's good. The other negative, I don't see this so much as a negative, but you have to use lubricant with these dies, even though they are carbide dies. The manufacturer still claims that you have to use lubricant to size these, which I don't think is a big deal because I started using case lube on all of my pistol reloading, even with carbide dies. It speeds up the process. It makes the handle easier to cycle, especially, like, say, if you're doing thousands of rounds, you want anything that you can do to make that lever easy to move. Mm-hmm. So I always use a spray lubricant that I don't have to remove when I'm done, and it really works great. So I don't see that as a big negative. And you can buy these casings for about 10 cents each right now, which is not too bad of a deal. And if you buy it in bulk, meaning like 10,000 or more, you can get them for about 8.5 cents a piece. So they're a little bit more, well, actually right now they're probably the same cost as, you know, brass 9mm casings. But if they last longer and they provide these benefits that the manufacturer claims, they could be a good option. So we'll see if it becomes popular or not. Like I say, I came across a couple this summer and some that were laying on the ground. I didn't really know what it was, but so we'll see if it catches on.
Glenn, can you give us the name of these again so we can start our Google
searches? They're called NAS3, and they are made by Shelltech. And there again, you can buy loaded ammunition or you can buy casings.
Okay.
So NAS3.
All right.
So let's talk a little bit about loading for the AR-15, specifically pistol variants of the AR platform, because this has gotten to be really popular in the last couple of years. AR-15 pistols have really taken off in popularity. There's a lot of them out there.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, and there's a lot of commercial manufacturers of the AR-15 that offer these in pistol configurations now in multiple calibers. They're really taken off in popularity. And so, you know, some would say, you know, what do I need an AR-15 pistol for? And, you know, why would I want one? And when they were first introduced,
who says that?
Well, I'll tell you, when they were first introduced, I asked the same questions. Like, I personally couldn't really find a practical use for one because they were very large as a pistol. Mm-hmm. They're difficult to shoot accurately, and they were kind of viewed as an oddity because they still had no shoulder stock, but they had the buffer tube still sticking out of the back of the gun, so it wasn't very concealable. But it lost a lot of its accuracy potential as a rifle. So I was, you know, what's the point? But along comes this thing called an arm brace, which really changed how AR-15 pistols are viewed and used. And the arm brace is a device that attached to the rear of the gun, which aids in stability and provides accuracy when you're using an AR-15 pistol. It's not a stock, however, and that's the big difference. It is not a stock. A stock is the primary device which separates a rifle from a pistol in the ATF definition of a rifle, okay? If you look at the definition, it says designed to be fired from the shoulder.
Yeah.
So shoulder stock is really what defines, you know, a rifle. So the arm brace is not a stock, even though it may resemble one, and it's shorter than a stock. But AR-15 pistols, they're compact, they're powerful, they're accurate now with the arm brace. The AR-15 pistols are not subject to federal permit for short-barreled rifles, as long as it's not a rifle. It's you know, designated as a pistol. And being compact, the AR-15 is ideal in emergency evacuations or survival guns. So they do have their use. And I think we are going to make a break right now for a commercial.
Now that we're once again in the great frozen north, it's time to stay warm and be prepared for the elements. Being prepared was ingrained in me at a very early age, and Auto Trim Design can help you be prepared too. With auto starts to warm your car, heated seats to warm your buns, moose lights to show you the way, mud flaps and floor mats to protect your rig, running boards to make getting in and out of your truck less tedious, and much, much more. Get prepared today at Auto Trim Design. And as Bob says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
You've sat in that chair for years. You love that chair. But something isn't right. There's a wiggle that wasn't there. Now you're missing a cap screw that definitely was there. Need a fastener? If it hooks up, holds on, hangs on, clips on, glues on, bolts on, screws in. If it fastens stuff together, Sentry has it. And the largest selection of nuts, bolts, screws, and washers in the interior. Standard to metric, chrome, galvanized, stainless. Sentry Hardware. What you need right now.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
A winter storm warning is in effect midnight tonight to noon on Saturday with some heavy snow expected. Today's forecast calling for some flurries, patchy freezing fog, sunny skies, and highs near 3 above. Look for some snow rolling in tonight and temperatures rising to about 10 above by 5 a.m. Tomorrow for Friday, some snow, highs near 30, lows around 18 degrees. And the weekend calling for some more snow and highs near 26. That's your latest Fairbanks area weather forecast.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. Glenn Miller is in the studio with us talking about reloading, and we have a caller. Caller, this is Laura.
Good morning, Laura and Glenn. Hey, Glenn, this is Ron. We talked in the store the other day. Great talking with you.
Yes, good morning.
Since you brought up the issue of the AR pistol, are you up to speed enough to comment on the Honey Badger situation?
No, I am not.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do that another time. And it was the recent ATF ruling that they put out, and then at least temporarily rescinded, so it's still kind of up in the air. I just thought maybe you had heard a little bit more about that than I had.
So this is regarding the status of the arm braces?
The status of the Honey Badger itself, I guess they were trying to contort it into a short-barrel rifle.
But in regards to the arm brace?
Yes.
And I know that, yes, that this is an issue that could affect a lot of people if they change their ruling on this. And this isn't the first time that ATF has done something like this. But if they go in a direction which we all hope they don't go in, yes, there could be a lot of people that are affected by that currently own AR-15 type pistols.
I got to cut you loose, Glenn. I got another phone ready.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
All right. We have another caller.
All right, caller, this is Laura and Glenn.
Yes, Laura.
Yes.
Hey, I've got a question for you. This is Dave.
Yes.
I bought several books of Not Your Average Joe.
Yes.
Last year, and I see you can't find them anywhere, like at Century anymore. My question is, are you going to maybe do a second printing? Or I think it would be good for people in Fairbanks that missed out.
Yeah, you know, there. I don't have access to the books that were left right now. I need to see if I can get a hold of those. There were a couple cases left, and when Joe passed away, things got a little confusing. So let me see if I can get a hold of those, and then it will take me a while, and then I will make an announcement on the program that we've done that. It's really up to even though I wrote the book, it's the copyright goes with Joe. And so it's really up to his family if they want to do a reprint or not. And, yes, I agree. This community would support that, and that money would go into a scholarship fund. But let me get back with everyone on the radio as soon as I can figure out whether I can get a hold of the books that were left or not.
Great. Okay? I appreciate you working with Joe on that book. I really enjoyed it, and I'd like to pass on more copies. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
So to finish up the conversation on the AR pistols, there are a lot of legal requirements regarding classification and building an AR-15 pistol, including the arm brace, which right now the ATF has already ruled on, but that could change. You have to, if you're interested in building an AR pistol, because, you know, the AR platform is very configurable and a lot of people like to build their own, just make sure that if you're doing so, you don't use a receiver that was originally registered as a rifle. It has to be registered as a pistol. Once a rifle, always a rifle in the ATF's eyes. So be careful what receiver to use. And also there's a lot of other restrictions on these pistols, like the length of pull, so the face of the trigger to the rear of the arm brace when it's fully extended must be within a certain distance, or it can fall into, you know, once again, a category of a short barrel rifle and be subject to the NFA registry. There's also a total overall length that you have to fall within, or it could fall into a category of a firearm instead of a pistol.
Yeah.
So be careful if you're going to build an AR-15 pistol. Ones that you buy off the shelf that are made by a manufacturer, you know, a reputable manufacturer, they're going to be legal. They're going to fall within the legal thresholds and be a legal pistol. If you're building your own, be careful. Know what you're doing and, you know, don't do something inadvertently that is going to cause you to be sideways with the law. But with the AR-15 pistol, there's some negatives out there. And one of the things is loss of projectile velocity due to the short barrels and loss of ballistic effectiveness. They're also very loud with high concussive results, especially in closed spaces. Okay. They can produce large muzzle flash, which is detrimental to night vision. And the shortened gas system that they use because of the short barrel can introduce some functional issues also. So in attempts to correct some of these issues, reloaders have some flexibility when loading ammunition for the AR-15 pistol variant. And some powders will work better than others in short barrels. And this is where a variety of loading manuals, a chronograph, and lots of your time is highly valuable. You'll best be able to determine what combination of loading components work best for your particular firearm, because they are all different and they all work differently. But I had a question from someone that was new to AR-15 pistol ownership who was interested in loading ammunition to reduce the muzzle blast and the flash commonly associated with these pistols, and asked if, you know, if they use the fast burning pistol powder to accomplish this would work. And the answer is definitely not. You know, you don't want to start deviating just because it's called the pistol. You don't want to start using pistol powder per se, even though some pistol powders, depending on the burning rate, overlap with rifle powders. But just trying to use a fast burning pistol powder in an AR-15, you know, 223 cartridge is really a recipe for disaster. So, once again, go back to the reloading manuals. There are some different powders that you can use to reduce flash and some blast, depending on the brake that you're using. But certainly don't start experimenting and just go to a pistol powder. That's that's not going to work real well at all. It's variable depending on the gun that you have. But you do have a lot of options out there with, well, right now you don't have a lot of options for powder.
Yeah.
But hopefully in a couple of months, you know, that problem will hopefully at least get easier to get some powder and primers. So let's talk a little bit about crimped primer pockets, because
okay.
I know we talked about this a little bit a couple of shows ago, and there's been some, and if you're going to start processing brass, this is something you really need to look for if you have a bunch of ammunition and brass that you want to process. But just about all military spec ammunition have crimped primer pockets, and some commercial ammunition apply a crimp to their primer pockets also. And so, you know, what is this and why do I really care about primer pocket crimps, you know? But basically a crimp is applied to the primer pocket to assure the primer won't fall out of the case. Primers are seated into the base of a case by friction fit. And the military specifies a crimp to better ensure reliability in their firearms, because having a primer fall out of a case in the heat of battle and falling into a rifle and jamming it up can be costly. So you'll find all the military spec cases have a crimp on it. But you need to inspect your cases to see if there's a crimp present, because if so, you have to remove it before attempting to seat a fresh primer into that case. Crimped primer pockets can be identified by looking for a slight circular indentation in the brass case around the primer. Some are real defined, some are not, depending on the intensity of the crimp. And different manufacturers, you know, do that differently. So some are crimped heavily, some are not. And at first, it's maybe a little difficult to see, but once you start become accustomed to what you're looking for, you can see the crimped primer pockets pretty easily. But a failure to remove a crimp before you attempt to seat a new primer can really be dangerous, because the crimp prevents an easy insertion of a new primer, and typically you wind up using excessive force, which can be bad when you're seating a primer. Primers have a lot of power. They're very powerful. One primer can make a lot of noise and can explode in the press, and I've actually seen where, if you're on a progressive press, where one primer goes off and it causes a chain reaction and it can detonate all the primers that are in your primer tube column.
Okay.
Especially, you know, like on the Dillon 650s with the primer system they have, if you have a detonation, chances are it's going to have a chain reaction, detonate every one of them in there, and it blows the entire primer system apart.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And it's very loud, and pieces fly around, and usually you wind up with a hole in the ceiling where all the primers go through the sheetrock, and it's not a good situation. So you never want to force primers. If there's something that's not working right, stop, look at it, look at the case, look at, you know, and find out what's going on. Don't just try to jam it in there, because bad things can happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are tools that are made to measure primer pockets to determine, you know, if these tools determine if the primer pocket has been stretched too far, if it's usable or not. But the same measurement tools can be used to determine if a crimp exists, if you can't see it. And those are made by a company called Ballistic Tools. You can go to ballistictools.com, and they're just really nice little primer pocket gauges, and I have one for small primer pockets and large primer pockets, and it'll tell you if it's too small and it'll tell you if it's too large.
About 20 seconds.
So it's a pretty nice little tool. But anyway, I think we're about out of time
and
for
Glenn,
today.
I wanted to thank you so much. This has been a wonderful program, very educational. I want to wish you the best of luck on your travels and all the matches. I hope you come back with wonderful stories for us. And we'll continue this in a few minutes when Glenn gets back. Listeners, stay safe and always keep your gun pointed in a safe direction. We'll talk to you all next week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.